Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop WMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. The recent shootings at Umpqua Community College in Oregon and those that followed shortly thereafter in Arizona and Texas have sped up the national dialogue on how to prevent these tragedies in the first place. Some think our country's approach to mental health is to blame. Many others think gun control is the answer. Yesterday, a federal appeals court upheld controversial gun control laws in New York and Connecticut that were a direct reaction to the shootings at Sandy Hook Elementary School in 2012. Forensic psychiatrist Kevin Smith has been studying the trend. He's provided the dangerousness risk assessment and active shooter response training to law enforcement officials from the Ulster County, New York Police Department and School District to the FBI and Department of Homeland Security. Dr. Smith has a private practice in Kingston and is a clinical assistant professor at New York Medical College. Can we prevent tragic school shootings and shootings in general? 1-800-348-2551. Okay. Kevin, thank you so much for being here. I'm delighted to see you here and to see you giving up this time. Now, you have studied criminal behavior for a long time, haven't you?
Quite a while, yes. Thank you for having me, by the way.
Well, we're delighted to do that. And okay, so what is the word forensic in forensic psychiatry mean?
Yeah, forensic psychiatry is a super specialty that deals with the interface between mental health and the law. So most of us in forensic psychiatry do competence to stand trial evaluations, evaluations for an insanity defense or an extreme emotional disturbance defense, competency to plea. Back when we had the death penalty, you also had to be competent to be put to death. So those were another evaluation that was done. But mostly today, it's about defendants committing felony crimes that have a mental illness and need an assessment done.
I don't want to go down the wrong road here because that's not why I want you here. But
right.
But what's the New York law look like, for example, in terms of the difference between crazy and competent and all the rest of them?
Okay. So crazy or mentally ill, if you will.
Yeah, we don't like crazy. Yet.
Right. Is different than insanity. Insanity is a legal term, and it varies according to what jurisdiction you're in. In the New York jurisdiction, the law reads that the person must lack substantial capacity to know and appreciate the nature and consequences of their actions, or that such actions are wrong according to the law. So you can be extremely mentally ill and not be insane because you don't meet those criteria. You can't get an insanity defense unless you are first very mentally ill. So lots of people can be mentally ill, but very few of those will ever get an insanity defense.
You wrote an extraordinary document. I have it in my hand right here called If You See or Hear Something, Say Something, What Everyone Can Do to Prevent Another School Shooting or Prevent Another Suicide. Can you give us the short form,
sure.
Digest of what's in there?
Okay. So, as you know, anywhere you go, particularly like in New York City, which is a big terrorist target, you see signs all over, particularly in the mass transit areas. If you see something, say something. And we know that that has worked very well in picking up indicators that a threat may exist, and then the police can intervene before something happens. So I took that and expanded it for the following reason. The people who have been school shooters since 1992 up until now have very accurately and openly predicted their violent behavior.
They have said themselves, I'm going to do this.
Yes. They've said who, what, where, when, or how in some form or fashion. And the problem has been that people who heard it or saw it did not think that it was true or would happen and never reported it to someone who could consolidate each of those risk factors for dangerous behavior and get an evaluation done to determine if that person is at increased risk for hurting themselves or hurting someone else. And that's what this is about.
Okay, so what are some of the indices that you would use?
Okay, so very easily, I can tell you the best way to remember them is an acronym, SAD persons. So S is for sex. Males have 10 times the propensity of females to behave violently, and every single mass school shooting has been perpetrated by a male in this country. A is for age, 12 to 29. Every one of our shooters in schools has been in that age category, except the two 10-year-olds that were in Jonesboro, Arkansas. In New York State, they've all been in that category. D is for distressed mentally. That doesn't necessarily mean they have to have a mental illness diagnosis. Usually what we see in our shooters are people who are distressed because of difficulty with navigating their social spheres, either their peer group at school or work or their family. P is for previous exposure, and that's exposure to weapons and the availability of weapons. And if there's anything we can do about gun control, it's to teach people to secure their weapons in their home so nobody can get them without the parents' permission. E is for ethanol. Ethanol is drinking alcohol, and that's a placeholder in a person's mind for drugs and alcohol. And that's not abuse, it's use. You only need to use it to have an increased risk because it alters your ability to think clearly. R is for rational thinking loss, and that can be rational thinking loss from any cause, including sleep deprivation, even adolescence itself. It doesn't have to be a diagnosable condition. The second S is for social support system lacking. So this is where someone either has been rejected or bullied in school or at work, or they perceive themselves to have been rejected or bullied. And that could also be in their family as well, not just their peer group. And then, O is for organized plan. Anyone who can tell you who, where, when, or how, and that's an or, any one of those should be considered a medical emergency because that means they have gotten to the point that they are planning their attack.
Right.
And it may be an attack on themselves or someone else.
So it could be Facebook, it could be emails, it could
Twitter,
be
Twitter.
Yeah.
And everyone is putting it out there now before they do it. The N is for no spouse or significant other, and that's a memory placeholder for recent rejection by a boyfriend or a girlfriend, or perhaps they moved away to go to college, get a job. It could also mean that there's a discord or loss in the family. So any conflict and aggression in any social sphere can increase your risk. And the final S is for serious, chronic, and varied violent behaviors. We know that the best predictor of future violence is a past history of violence. And the more violent events you've had in the past and the more varied they are, the higher your risk.
So if the kid on the block has killed its cat and everybody knows it,
that's a high risk.
There's a high risk,
yes.
Right there. Okay, so, but the main thing here, Kevin, that seems so clear to me is that you have to have gutsy people out there, the people who are listening to this program right now, who say, yeah, you know, this fits the guy next door. But a lot of people don't want to, you know, get involved. A lot of people don't want to say anything. And then it's sort of on them, isn't it?
Yes. It might be helpful to set up, you know, the opportunity to call in anonymously. In the school districts where we're putting this program in place and have put it in place, they've created a pyramid of expertise so that everyone in the organization, students and parents and teachers and principals, all know who to funnel their awareness of these risk factors to, so someone can consolidate them together and then evaluate the person, determine if they have an increased risk, what that increase is, and then work with professionals to create a mitigation plan to reduce or eliminate the risk.
So very quickly, because we sort of have to go to a break, but if in fact you got somebody, a candidate, who fits this description, are the police allowed to go knock on the door and to pick the kid up?
Yes.
They are?
Yes. Now, many communities now in New York State have a mobile crisis intervention team or mobile mental health team, and we would typically call on them and have them participate with the police in dealing with what we call an EDP, emotionally disturbed person, and do the assessment right on site and determine if the plan needs to be escalated to, say, a hospitalization or further evaluation by someone with more expertise, that sort of thing.
Well, let me put it this way, Kevin Smith. We're delighted to have you with us, forensic psychiatrist Kevin Smith. I wanted to not take calls during that first period so you could sort of explain it. Lots of phones are ringing right now. There are two free phones. But we'll be right back after we take a very short break.
Support comes from New World Catering by Rick Orlando, now hosting weddings, events, business lunches, and family celebrations in the WAMC listening area. NewWorldCatering.com. Support comes from Lori Stillwell CPA PC, providing tax and accounting services for businesses and their owners in Saratoga Springs and beyond. StillwellCPA.com. Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, with a second shop now open on Windmere Avenue in the heart of Greenwood Lake. YeOldWarwickBookshop.com. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. AshfieldStone.com. Union College Concert Series presenting pianist Jeremy Denk, performing works by Haydn, Beethoven, and Schubert with a set of classically inspired ragtimes. Sunday, October 25th, 3 p.m., UnionCollegeConcerts.org. And Saratoga Saddlery, Saratoga Springs, New York, an equestrian lifestyle boutique featuring cowboy boots by Lucchese and Ariat for women, men, and kids. On Facebook and SaratogaSaddlery.com.
And we are back with forensic psychiatrist Dr. Kevin Smith, who has written on what everyone can do to prevent another school shooting or prevent another suicide. We got three people on the phone, 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to Abigail. All right, Abigail, you're on.
Hi, Alan. I'm glad I'm on. I'm also very patient because I called in way before the program started.
Well, that's great. Thank you for your patience.
Okay, good. What I would like to say is that when I was teaching at SUNY New Paltz, this was at least seven years ago, I remember coming across, if you see something, say something.
Exactly.
And I brought, that was at Port Authority in New York, and I brought that notion to my students, and I asked them what they thought it meant. And I have always looked at myself in terms of mindfulness rather than looking at other people and seeing what it really meant. So that is kind of my message. I so enjoyed the TED program because...
Abigail, I'm so sorry. There are people behind you. I just wanted you to... Do you have a question?
I have lots of questions, but I think you should let other people speak. Mindfulness is very important, and that's what we should be looking at.
I thank you, Abigail. Yeah. Okay, mindfulness. What does that mean to you, doctor? Keep stuff in mind. And in other words, I think what Abigail meant, I suspect, is, just always be on the lookout. And that's something you've been preaching, too.
Right? Vigilance is key.
Yeah.
And not just with school shootings, with, terrorism as well. And in one of the courses I gave to Homeland Security, a couple of the FBI analysts came up and said to me that they believe that this same SAD person's acronym will work for them on
I'm sure that's true. You take a look at, we're on the train one day, and somebody had left their luggage down at one end of the train. And, the conductor came rushing in and said, "Does anybody know who this belongs to?" Somebody said so. But that's right. A lot of people don't want to do it because they don't want to get involved. They don't want to make fools of themselves. But, an ounce of prevention and all like that. Okay. We'll go to Scott in East Hampton. Okay. Scott, you're on. And I know our call answer is going to be taking the ones that are used down. Go ahead. Go ahead, Scott.
Hi, how are you, Alan?
Good, Scott.
Good.
Thanks for calling.
Yes. I guess I have somewhat of a hypothetical question. That would be, if there were no weapons for anybody to get their hands on in the entire United States, we'll say, and some of these mentally challenged or mentally ill people, if that's what we'll call them, if they were, per se, running down people with an automobile, in the same sense as they're killing people with these guns, would these mentally ill people that see this on the TV and the news, is it a following thing? Are we going to see the same type of response with other kids or mentally ill people running down people with a car because they don't have the weapons to do this?
Okay, you got you got a good question. Let's get an answer. Okay, Doc?
Okay. So, first of all, there's decades of research that has clearly shown that people with mental illness who are compliant with their treatment and their medications are no more dangerous than the rest of us. That's a fact. It changes when you have certain kinds of mental conditions where they're not compliant with their treatment and especially their medications, and in those conditions where violence can be a part of the behavior that we see in that untreated mental illness, okay? So that's the groundwork there. Secondly, there was a famous study that was done. It's called the Toronto Subway Study, where they would have one suicide, it would be published in the newspaper, the radio, the television, and they would have an epidemic of suicides in the subway.
You think that's what happens with school shootings here in the United States?
They had all of the publicity agree not to publish it, and the epidemic stopped. They published again, the epidemics restarted. They stopped publishing, it stopped. So that proved by Cook's postulates, yes, there is a copycat kind of behavior that goes on there, okay? So is everyone who's mentally ill going to go out and run people down because someone did it in New York City with their car? Absolutely not.
Okay, but let's assume for a second that you take everybody's guns away, which is not going to happen, as you know, Scott, in this country.
Correct.
I think it's 2 guns per person when you add them all up or something like that.
I think it's more than that, actually.
Yeah, it may be more than that. So that's not going to happen. But Scott's question is interesting. So if they don't use a gun, would they use a car? If they don't use a car, would they use a knife? Which is exactly, by the way, what's going on in Israel right now. Guys are running out in the street with a knife.
Well, and you may remember, we had 2 of those episodes back-to-back in, I think it was a couple of years ago. One was the Skripal fellow in Pennsylvania, who slashed 21 students and a guard at the school with a knife.
Right.
And then there was the week following that, there was the fellow in Connecticut who stabbed and killed the girl who refused to go to the prom with him. And so those were 2 knife attacks at schools following the Sandy Hook shooting.
Well, but of course, Scott, I guess we could agree, could we not, that a guy with an AK-47, and by the way, I don't know what these guns are, but multiple, you know, ability, a machine gun to kill a lot of people, has to, by definition, be less dangerous, even though you're talking about a stabber who stabbed 21 people. You know, there has to be, right, a difference between your ability, if you use your fist or a knife, than if you're using a machine gun.
Right. The more lethal the weapon and the more rapidly you can discharge that weapon, the more deaths that are going to occur, the more victims you're going to have.
Hey, Scott, a very interesting call. Thank you so much for making it. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Let's go to in Jamie. Okay, Jamie in Ellenville. Okay, Jamie.
How you doing, Alan?
Go.
Dr. Smith, from what you're saying, you would agree then that this is really a problem of the mores of society, not a security issue. That we have to change our mores in order to address how to deal with this. Is that correct?
I think it's a combination of the two. I think the more we can change and heighten our mores as a collective group of humanity, I think the less that we'll have of this kind of
You know, like, we can't depend on, like, that somebody's going to make a phone call about the crazy person next door. We actually need systems that would make it possible for us to check off, is there a crazy person next door? Like, if we could change the police function from being a strictly a security one to being a social one, where a police, like, would be control of a couple of blocks area, and they would have social workers, and they would have mental health workers.
Okay.
And they would have
all right, Jamie. He's the guest. You're the caller. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yes.
What's the thing?
Jamie.
Can we do it without that? Yeah, without intervening from the time that people are born?
I think we got your premise. Now we're going to ask the doctor to give us an answer.
Okay. It's a tough question.
Well, does it have to be one or the other? I mean, in other words, you know, you can do both. You can do mores in society. You can do an educational function, but at the same time, there are other things to do.
Here's what I can tell the caller. I consult with the Police Chiefs Association in Ulster, Green, so on. I work with the police. They get a lot of training in dealing with EDPs, emotionally disturbed persons. They do coordinate, and at our monthly meetings of the police chiefs, we have mental health people there from the hospital, from the psychiatric emergency room, from the outpatient services in the counties, and also from the mobile crisis response unit. And they know to work together. So when the police respond to a crisis that's going on, and they
don't we need them to respond before it's a crisis?
No, we
know from the beginning the situation a person's in. Them out of it.
Well, Jamie, we know very well that your point is extremely well taken. You could take a cop and say, all right, policeman, we want you to have a master's degree in social work. We want you also to carry a gun. We want you to do all of those things. So your point is well taken.
I like employment. Let's have different people do it. They're all the same team.
Okay. Jamie, thanks for the great call. Appreciate it.
The other thing is that technology is going to help us a lot, too. Sensors, robotics, and also architecture that's going to control entrances, that's going to make it possible for sections of buildings to be isolated. I hate to say it, but we're going to have to deal with that reality,
well,
and that's the way we're going to have to do it a lot.
And I think we are.
Until we figure out the mores. Yeah. But until then, we're going to have to change a lot of our infrastructure to protect ourselves.
Jamie, a lot of people behind you. One last question.
Kevin. Have a good one.
Kevin?
Yes. I just want to remind the caller. The people who are perpetrating the school shootings and the stabbings have all openly and accurately predicted what they were going to do. They broadcast it on Twitter. They broadcast it on Facebook. So there was more than ample opportunity for people to see that, report it, and have an intervention before the act occurred.
It's actually a brilliant point. Thank you.
That's sad.
Indeed. Thank you, Jamie. All right. We'll go to Alex in Waterford. Okay, Alex, you're on.
Hi. I have more of a comment that I wanted to make. And you're suggesting that people call in to the authorities, neighbors, based on this list of yours. Well, what if you're wrong? You're enduring your neighbor to undue scrutiny when he actually wasn't a danger. And that's like saying, All terrorist acts are committed by Muslims. My neighbor's a Muslim. He must be a terrorist.
Not necessarily, because remember, this is a very long list of indices. But, Alex, you asked your question. It's a good question. Kevin?
Right. All we're looking for is for people to be vigilant, for those risk factors to be present, report it, let the experts go in and do an assessment. No one can predict who's going to be violent when. We're no better than the flip of a coin. But we can be extremely good at evaluating someone for an elevated risk of hurting themselves or someone else, determining where that risk level sits and what kind of plan can be put together to mitigate and or eliminate that elevated risk. That's what we're talking about. So if somebody reports their neighbor, an evaluation assessment is done, and it's determined that it's not an elevated risk, nothing has happened. Nothing's going to change in that individual's life.
Okay. Alex,
except the individual has been put under some sort of scrutiny, which actually theoretically could actually push them over the edge. Instead of solving the problem, you're actually creating the problem.
So far, it has not pushed anyone over the edge.
Alex, thanks for the call and a very good point. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, have a great day.
Okay, let's go to Ron in Hyde Park. Ron, you're on.
Yeah, I agree with Alex. I've got a problem with you guys saying anonymous phone calls going in. I was in a nasty divorce, and some people on the other side used Child Protective Services. Of course, it was unfounded, but you guys are willing to give up individual rights for some collective.
Okay, got it. Got it. Ron, got it. We got a lot of people behind you. Stay right there. Stay there. Kevin.
Yeah, we're talking about school shootings here. So the way this has been set up is in the schools. And it's the fellow students in the schools and or the teachers who see this information, and they know who to give it to within their organization, and then they get the people in their organization involved. So it's not getting escalated.
Except, Kevin, the last two callers, the you guys stuff aside, have made a point, which is that there is a possibility that somebody's civil liberties, as we know them today, are going to be violated. And then the question, as always, is yelling fire in a crowded theater. Would you rather have a Sandy Hook, or would you rather have somebody, potentially violating somebody's space?
Right.
That is a tough question, and obviously always is going to be a tough question.
Right. And that's so we try and minimize the interference as much as possible.
Well said.
Get things safe.
Okay, so now we will go to what does that look like? Edward, maybe Edward Edward, is that you?
Yes, it is.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. There's going to be background noise. We have guys working on our house. This is not about theoretical issues. This is about personal experiences. I hosted a couple of people, one from Newtown, Connecticut, and one who's a director of a local New York Women Against Gun Violence right after the Sandy Hook shooting.
Right.
They both wept as they talked about children, teachers, and parents they knew suffered from that shooting. And all of those people, those children and those adult teachers, were gunned down in a matter of minutes because there were guns that could do that. And isn't it insane in this country that we allow access to those killing machines when in Israel they're withdrawing knives from people because they can? Isn't that insane? Isn't our society kind of crazy that we allow this and legislators allow this to happen because they're paid off by the NRA?
And the Supreme Court of the United States, by the way. Kevin?
Yeah, I'm not a person who's in favor of assault rifles in any way, shape, or form. But if Sandy Hook couldn't get this nation to come together and do something about it, then we had to look for some other alternatives to start deploying in order to intervene before someone acts.
Well, it's not either or. I think your plan is an excellent plan. On the other hand, you get a governor who has had some guts in this case. You know, I'm not his biggest fan, but he's had some guts in this case, and he really has seized the moment to talk about gun control. The Supreme Court will probably decide, for the right wing again.
There were signs all over New York saying repeal the state.
Well, I know. People think of this as their bête noire. Hey, Edward, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Yeah. 1-800-348-2551. There's one free phone. We got a lot of people checking in on the internet at VoxPop at WMC.org. But we have to take a short break.
Support comes from DeBlas's Chamber Music Series, presenting its 83rd season with three Sunday afternoon concerts through November 22nd at the Hyde, Glens Falls, New York. DeBlas's-chamber-music.org. Upstate Divorce Mediation, specializing in divorce mediation and collaborative divorce, helping couples who are seeking a legal separation or divorce. Offices in Albany, Saratoga, and Catskill. UpstateDivorceMediation.com. Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts. A family-owned business for over 50 years, BoydenandPerrin.com. Unusual wedding rings and more in Crawford Square, North Street, downtown Pittsfield. Working with New York Diamond District artisans to create customized jewelry, unusualweddingrings.com. And Curring Compliance Services, Inc., Greenwich, New York, and now in St. Paul, Minnesota. National compliance and regulatory consultants for the life insurance industry, CurringCompliance.com.
And we are back, and we got a lot of people, so keep your questions short. Doctor, keep your answers as short as you can.
I will try.
I know how you have so much sophistication in this. It can't be easy. Okay, we'll go to Edward. Did we do Edward already?
Yes,
we did Edward. But who we got on five? Who's there? Hello.
Hello, my name's Maureen.
Okay, Maureen, go ahead.
Last week had an article written by Malcolm Gladwell in the New Yorker magazine called "The Thresholds of Violence."
Came out on the 18th, I think, right?
Wanted you to comment on it because I thought it was pretty fascinating, and I wanted your opinion of this kind of slow motion rioting that he's talking about in terms of threshold of violence.
And I haven't had an opportunity to read it yet. I learned about the publication actually driving up to Albany today for this show, so I'm going to get it and read it this evening.
Okay, Maureen, very quickly, give us the gist.
Basically, this sociologist wrote this theory about four decades ago, and it talks about thresholds of violence when you have a riot situation. The person who's the first one to throw the rock has a threshold of one, and you know, by the time you get to the person with the threshold of 100, you have an entirely different group or an entirely different looking person. And he talks about this progression of shootings as a kind of a slow motion riot, and pretty fascinating. And he ends the article by saying the problem's not so much that there's an endless supply of deeply disturbed young men, but young men no longer need to be deeply disturbed.
Maureen, let's give Kevin a chance here. Go ahead.
I think the best response I can give you is that if you look at the history of school shootings, and this is kindergarten to 12th grade only, okay, since 1992, there has been actually a gradual and continuous significant decline in the total number of shootings and even the total number of victims.
And that's because?
Because we've been more aware of it and people have been working on various procedures to put in place from what they can do with gun control.
So our impression that we are now getting worse and worse in this is wrong, you're saying?
That's correct. But what we've had is a couple of extreme instances in the last couple of years, Sandy Hook being the most notable, Virginia Tech with 33 victims. That was the biggest school shooting that we've had on history, and Columbine was the third most with 15.
But Kevin, your work here is designed to put a stop to that kind of to those massacres. And yet, if I were arguing for the NRA, which of course I'm not, I would argue, well, Dr. Smith said, who's an advocate of certain gun control, that it's getting better. So why should we do anything?
Because it's still happening, and it will still continue to happen. Yeah. And you know, it's an interesting thing about guns. I'm on my second stalker now, and for 2 years I carried a gun everywhere I went, including in the bank. And I was amazed at how no one reacted to this whatsoever.
And they saw
walking
they
in
saw
a
the
bank
gun.
With
saw
a,
the
yes,
yeah,
I need to keep it visible because I'm concerned that if somebody sees it and it looks like it's somewhat hidden, they'll think I'm nefarious, and then now sure. I'm going to be a target.
Sure.
And I've stopped carrying it, despite the fact that I still have an active stalker, because of my own concern about the safety issues involved.
Sure. Maureen, very quickly, anything else?
No, thank you very much.
Thank you, Maureen. Appreciate your call.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go to Petra. Is it Petra?
Yes, hello.
Hello.
So my question for Dr. Smith is, he had mentioned that his sad person's policy or program could also work for Homeland Security, and I just don't see the connection. If he could explain that a little better.
Okay. I'll repeat what I said before. When I trained it for the Homeland Security and the FBI, the analysts who work on identifying homeland terrorist possibilities came to me at the end of my presentation and told me that their analysis of potential terrorists was one that indicated that this SAD person's acronym also could work for identifying people at risk of becoming homegrown terrorists. Now, I don't have access to that data. I don't have a security clearance anymore, so I don't know what's there. All I know is what the analyst told me.
Okay, Petra?
Yes.
Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. Let me just say, we just heard from Nancy, who said, several years ago, my teenage son received an email threat from a schoolmate. The email said he was going to kill my son and several others at the school. My son knew the boy was violent and unbalanced, so shared it with me. I called the police and reported it. They told me to just keep watch, whatever that meant. It was almost 24 hours before they contacted us. Turned out it was a viable threat. The boy had access to weapons, a history of mental illness and violence, etc. But what was I to do when the police wouldn't respond? I had no clue. Now, you know, she does start by saying several years ago.
Yeah,
the question is whether that culture's changed.
And this is exactly why this kind of educational
and
opportunity and training for police officers is so important. You know, the more they get, the better that they know, and they're more aware of this information. And our police in the counties where I work actually carry a credit card that we had printed up around with them that has the SAD person's acronym on one side, and on the reverse side are the numbers of various professionals in mental health that they can contact to assist them in doing an assessment, including my own personal cell numbers.
Well, let me say this to you, Kevin. Let's just hope you're right, because I have seen examples, personally, examples of you report a crime or you report a threat, and they say, basically, so what? And so you got to be very, very assiduous in making sure that they have the kind of training you're talking about. Let's go to James in Hudson. Okay, James, you're on.
Hi, I'm just my question, and then I have a few points, and then I'll listen to the answer.
Yeah, but it's going to be short. Go ahead.
I'm going to be short. I'm usually succinct. Can we legislate morality? I believe that we should deal with this as a civic issue. Just the same, I believe both of you gentlemen have automobiles.
Is that a question? Yes.
Yeah, I believe you have. So there should be... on guns, there should be a tax, and there should be a insurance. And we can't make people be good people, but we can make it more difficult for them to be bad people.
Well, we're all for that, James. The problem is, of course, the Supreme Court of the United States, which is going to come along and say this is a violation of the Second Amendment, and therefore you can't do that. So,
they approved Obamacare as a tax.
Well, yes, they did. So let's just see. Let's hope that you're right, because the Cuomo gun control law will go to the Supreme Court of the United States. Sounds eminently reasonable to me, as does the one in Connecticut, where all those little children were killed. Let's see what they do, because I have
I'm a liberal, and I believe in, you know, but I jump with, I think anyone that kills someone is mentally ill, but I just also think we could have reasonable, you know, policy on this, because it's the killing of the weak.
Okay, so James, hold on a second. Kevin?
Yeah, I think the one point that James is making here is very critical, and that's we've got to get people to secure and lock their weapons so their children just can't grab them, take them, and use them. And that's what we've seen.
But why not
we
make
saw
them
it
buy
in Umpqua.
But why not make them buy insurance? Why not make them make this a difficult process to
sure.
get guns?
Sure. I wouldn't have a problem with having guns insured, but I can tell you to the people who've lost their children that insurance isn't going to take care of their loss and their sorrow.
Yeah.
It'll put some money in their pocket, but that's about it. We haven't stopped their kid from getting killed.
James, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Right. Let's go to Richard in Schenectady. All right, Richard, you're on.
Yes, thank you. Not to offer this as an idea of replacing the other good suggestions that have been made, but I'd like to go back to something that was said before about the subway suicides and the when they stopped being publicized, they stopped happening. And couldn't that same idea have a lot of value with the idea of these shootings in general? I think there's far too much publicity of these events, and I'm not talking just about publicizing their photo and their name and what their cause is, but even just reporting it at all.
No, it's an interesting point that you're making because, obviously, some school districts will not report bomb threats anymore for exactly that reason. Kevin?
You know, it would really be great if we could accomplish that in this country, but given our freedom of speech issues, which are hardly second to gun control in this country, I don't see how we will ever get the media not to publicize in our country.
Sure.
Remember the subway.
Can you imagine not having done it after Sandy Hook?
No.
Wouldn't have.
Not at all.
Yeah.
And just remember the subway study that showed this copycat effect was done in Toronto, not in the U.S.
Which is different. Richard, thank you very much. Okay, I'm going to ask you a whole bunch of questions that have come in over the web. I'll ask them very quickly. We only have a few minutes, so you answer them equally quickly. Okay, Kevin?
I will.
Okay. Your guest says that mass shootings are declining, and yet there's a study by the CDC and FBI that says different. The study also showed a correlation with the loosening of gun laws.
Actually, the regression graph that I discussed came from the FBI, and it goes from 1992 to 2012, January.
Let's see here. Dr. Smith, Bob says, does not include the accumulation of weapons in his list of criteria for forecasting of potential mass killers, even though virtually all of them do that. Is there any reason for that omission other than it doesn't fit into his sad person's mnemonic?
Actually, it is in there, and that's the P, previous exposure to guns and the availability of guns.
Okay, and thank you for that. And Larry says, Switzerland reportedly has many firearms. Is there a history of mass shooting there? Regards, Larry.
I'm not familiar with
with a homogeneous population.
I know there are countries where there are more guns per capita than the U.S., but the number of shootings from guns is virtually zero. So we do stand out differently from other countries, regardless of the number of guns they have.
And here comes from William. I hear growing numbers of people calling for the elimination of the Electoral College. This is right on point. Why less hesitancy to change this than the Second Amendment? Well, people are more concerned about their guns than they are about the Electoral College. I think that's pretty simple. Let's go to Jerry in Little Falls. Okay, Jerry, you're on.
Oh, yes. I just got a comment to make that experience that I had this summer about vigilance. I went to the state office building for appointment, and I was going through security, and I noticed this guy walk by me with a long case that could have had a rifle in it, that shape, and he kind of just flashed a badge to the person who was checking me in and kept walking. And I turned around and I looked, and the woman didn't see him. I said, there's a guy just walked by here with this case. And so she went to her cameras and says, well, I don't see anybody. And so I thought that kind of odd. And I noticed down the hall there was another room. There was a police officer type, a guy in uniform, another security person. So I walked over to him and I told him the same thing. And he said, well, I'm security for this room here. That's not my department.
No, my job.
Yeah.
And that was it. Nobody did anything.
And it's amazing. I've actually had the experience. I have a badge. It's not a police badge. It's for the International Society of Police Surgeons. So it looks like a badge. And when I showed my passport and it was in the case with that badge at the airport, the TSA agent not only didn't screen me at all, they asked me if I needed any answers to how to carry my weapon on board the airplane.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, these mistakes do happen, and clearly that's not the intended outcome, but we have to be more vigilant, everyone, including especially people like the TSA.
But more is better. In other words, it isn't that you're going to be perfect, but you can, in fact, instill in people so that more people will take this stuff seriously, right?
Yes, and I tend to be the person who over-reports than under-reports.
Well, and so does Jerry, and I liked what Jerry did. I mean, I think it was a gutsy thing. We had people calling up and saying, well, if you do that, you might, you know, impugn somebody's integrity if he was walking in and he was perfectly acceptable to be working.
Frankly, I'd rather impugn their integrity and go and apologize to them later than to see some kid shot dead, so...
Yeah, I figured he was probably okay, but, you know, it just somebody, just look at him, you know, go see who the guy was or something. So they didn't even know who he was.
So, Jerry, here's the point. If everywhere you look in a subway in New York, it says, if you see something, do something, you know, say something. And then when somebody says something, there's always somebody to yell that this is an infringement. I mean, we have choices to make, don't we?
Yeah, it is a give and take, definitely.
Yeah. You're a psychiatrist. You have studied social psychiatry and what's happening in this country. Do you think that we face, Kevin, an increasing problem? I mean, will there be a lot more of these that we're going to be looking at? Yeah.
And I can give you my opinion. I have no concrete research to back this up. But many of us my age grew up in the age of Aquarius, when it was love children and living in communes. And we've evolved out of the age of Aquarius into the age of narcissism, in my opinion. And everybody is focused on me, me, me. And we're kind of, I think, losing our fundamental basis of our social system and thinking about putting other people first and the do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. And it's, what are you going to do for me instead?
So is the narcissism, which I know is a favorite word of psychiatrists, is the narcissism predictive of violent behavior?
Malignant narcissism, yes, can be predictive. But I don't like to use the word predict because we're not good at predicting yet. Frankly, the closest we've come to predicting is Dr. Posner at Columbia University. She's come up with a tiered evaluation process for evaluating people for suicide, which she finds works well for people who are looking at being violent towards others because 90% of them are also suicidal. Mm-hmm. And I have some hope for that system. But as of right now, I think we're looking for a better tool.
Jerry, thank you for your call. Appreciate it very
much. Well, one last comment on that. Just one thing you said before, what my comment was about maybe the police or security people getting more training so they could react to what I said to them in a better manner.
Sure.
Yes. And
okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Okay, we're out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in, all of you. I'd also like to thank our wonderful friend, Dr. Kevin Smith, for joining us today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, presenting the film The Courageous Heart of Irene Sendler, who rescued 2,500 people from the Warsaw Ghetto, 7 p.m. on November 1st at Temple Sinai. Panel discussion to follow, 518-584-8730. Homemade Theater, HMT at the Spa Little Theater, presenting A Chorus Line, weekends through October 25th at the Spa Little Theater, Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org, College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services, pardon me, and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years, collegestreetmotors.com, and the Henyon Bakery, Amherst since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday weddings, and special occasions cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings, henyanbakery.com. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us. Remember, the conversation continues online at wmc.org/voxpop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Deborah O'Leary. Our engineer has we already talked about that. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.